Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 52 of Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. This is Lori.
And this is Abby.
We are so excited. Today, we're going to continue our series on executive functioning skills. Abby, what are we talking about today?
Today, we're talking about the executive function area of initiation. We have a very special guest joining us today from Chaos Free ADHD. We have Mary Smith, and she's going to talk to us more about this area of initiation and what exactly it means and looks like. So welcome, Mary. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome.
I think that chaos-free ADHD, I love that, but it's also a little bit of an oxymoron, right? Like ADHD is usually a lot of chaos.
Brings a lot of chaos.
I'm excited to hear what you have to share today.
For your business, chaos-free ADHD.
So tell us a little bit about you. How did you land in the world of ADHD?
Well, actually, I was diagnosed pretty late in life at 35.
Okay.
And by that time, I had 5 kids and was honestly just losing my mind with trying to keep up with everything, work and 5 kids, right, and marriage.
I can't imagine.
And so I got diagnosed, and actually, I was working with a therapist who looked at me and said, Mary, have you ever thought you might have ADHD? And I was like, what? And got evaluated. Sure enough, that was it. And as I went through the evaluation, I started looking at my kids going, I think I see them in me a lot. And over the course of the years, they were evaluated, they were diagnosed. And in looking for help for them, I came across this idea of a coach, right? And back then, all they had was you could take medication, which is needed, right? Or you can go to therapy.
Therapy, right.
And you can get your accommodations at school. And when I looked at my kids, I didn't think they needed therapy. Mm-hmm. And I know as a parent, I didn't need therapy. I needed somebody to really help me help my children with some of their unique challenges from ADHD. And when I found this idea of a coach, I thought, that's exactly what we need.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so I went and got trained.
So you got trained to become a coach. Did you find a coach first to help you with tools and strategies for working with your kids? Or did you just jump right into training to be a coach and then you became the coach of your children?
So I was working with a person who had worked with adults with ADHD before, and so she was my coach.
Okay.
And after she sort of got me to a stable place where I was functioning effectively, that's when I found this idea of a coach. Ask around, what do you think? Do you think I could do this? People encouraged me to do it. And that's when I went and got, it's almost 200 hours in coach training and child behavioral management training.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, awesome. And that was 13 years ago. I've been doing it ever since. And did I coach my own kids? I used some of the techniques with my own kids, but no, I did not coach my own kids. That's not a good idea.
It's not a good idea.
Kind of like tutoring your own kids.
Right.
Bad idea.
Yeah. Testing your own children. Even when we were training to become diagnosticians and we had to have so many different people that to test of different ages, they always recommended do not go and test your own children.
Because, not a good thing.
Yeah.
So moving on to our topic today about initiation, how would you simply explain the executive function area of initiation for our listeners?
Well, first I would tell you what it's not. A lot of times when parents come to me, they think that their child is having trouble with time management or with organization, prioritization, and planning. And what it turns out, the more you talk to the child, they understand exactly what they're supposed to do. They know when it's supposed to be done. They just cannot get their brain to turn on and start the activity and then carry through to complete it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I like to explain that.
Mm,
it's sort of
good.
This kind of energy that it takes to activate and actually start the task.
So then tell us a little bit in your own personal experience. Give us some examples from not only your life, but from living with your kids. What are some examples of when you've seen issues with initiation?
Well, the most common one is coming home from school and starting your homework.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I will talk a little bit about that as we go over some of the strategies. But for my own personal experience, working as a coach and putting together programs that educate parents, I'm not always really happy and don't prefer to have to do all the writing that goes with it. And so that can be very hard for me to start, even though I need know I need to do it. And so what I do is I work with a friend of mine who coaches me through that. And we use some different strategies. She knows me, and she helps me get unstuck and gets that complete.
So in an ADHD brain, what are some reasons that we, because I can speak as a group here, why do we struggle with that? Why is getting started so hard?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think
why do I procrastinate so many tasks until the very last second and put it off and have a hard time getting started on even something as easy as doing laundry?
Right. So I think there's always talk about this sense of overwhelm, that the thing is too big for me to start and that I'm having trouble breaking it down. To be honest, I have not found that to be the number one reason, or that we have this negative emotion tied to it. A lot of times you'll hear that reason. What I'm finding mostly with my adults that I work with and my kids is that they are having a difficult time to transition from doing a preferred activity to a non-preferred activity.
Okay.
And so they're sitting in this place of constant stimulation and feedback. And it's comfortable for them. They've hit the pocket, right? They're focused and it's a comfortable place for them. And now what they have to do is turn that hyper focus off and let go of that stimulation, mm-hmm. that feedback, that really pleasant feedback of, man, I am locked in the pocket here. I'm paying attention. And they have to turn that off and turn around and go start up on something that's not quite preferred. And remember the ADHD brain, that sort of paradox. Sometimes it can turn on to things really easily. And sometimes when we don't really have an emotional attachment to it,
mm-hmm.
or a sense of urgency that's internal to us, it's really hard for us to turn on to that. And so that's most often really the problem that I see with kids and activating on what they need to be doing.
That's interesting. Yeah, that is interesting. Because I do feel like with me, as I'm listening to you say that, because I do definitely deal with the overwhelm, and I do feel like there's, if I don't know where to start on something, or it doesn't come easily to me, is probably a better way to say it.
Right.
Then I'm just like, I don't want to think about that. That's too much to think about. I don't know where to start. It's not easy. I'm going to go do something that's easy.
Mm-hmm.
So a student might be like, fine, I'll do my math. That's quick, fast. I can get through it. It's black and white. Mm-hmm. There's only five problems left. But it's tackling sometimes those bigger projects too, right?
Right. And I think the way I explain this to parents is that we all have this set of tasks that we have to do, right? And for every one of those tasks, there's a certain amount of energy that it takes for us to get that started. And this is sort of my chemistry background coming in, mm-hmm. is this activation energy. So whether it's playing electronics, loading the dishwasher, or doing my homework, each one of those things is going to take a different level of activation energy. And what I have to be careful of is I can arrange the sequence of those activities where I'm not trying to make that jump uphill. I'm sure. not having to start an activity, then the next activity is going to require more.
Mm.
So the mistake I often see with kids and homework after school is parents are taking a very compassionate approach. You've been in school all day, poor thing. Oh my gosh, you must be tired. And they let them have about 20, 30 minutes on electronics and then say, all right, now it's time to start mm-hmm. your homework. Well, the electronics is very easy to start, takes very little energy. The homework is very hard, takes a lot. And so it's really like asking their brain to push this boulder uphill. And a lot of times I'll say, you think you're being compassionate, but you're not. Mm-hmm. The real compassion is bring them home, give them a snack, give that brain some energy, and start them on the harder thing first.
So I'm going to go ahead and apologize to all the parents that I have told to give them a brain break
give them
after
a down
school.
Time.
Let them go play outside. Mm-hmm. Let them have that brain break, because that makes absolute sense. You're taking it from one extreme to the other, mm-hmm. instead of kind of keeping them in that rhythm of school and just letting them power through with a snack, whatever.
Yeah.
But staying in that place, in that pocket of homework, of schoolwork,
it
yeah,
does
that totally
make
sense. But I am the first to say that even me, like, because I always think I need a break, but you're
break.
Right. But that's, I can't come back from a break.
Exactly.
Kids will come and tell me they don't like the idea at first, but when they come back after trying it for a week or so, they'll be like, all right, you were right. It
really
is easier to start to do my homework, and I really do get it done faster. And this is a hard sell for kids.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so the payoff needs to be made very clear to them is that, look, when you come home and you're starting on electronics first, one of those really hyper-focus activities, and for some kids that's reading or playing Legos, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're starting on that high-focus thing, what's going to happen? You know somebody's going to interrupt you,
mm-hmm.
and then there's going to be get off, get off, get off, mm-hmm. maybe a fight. Then you got to go do the homework, which you didn't want to do. But if you just switch the order, you have to make sure the kid knows you're not losing electronics time. You're not mm-hmm. losing Legos and reading.
You may get
you're
more.
You're just changing order exactly.
The order.
And what's going to happen is when you do get to it, nobody's going to be sitting there going, you need to get off and do something
five
else.
Minutes. Five more minutes, yeah.
Nobody's there. It's going to be this uninterrupted, more enjoyable.
Right. It makes perfect sense. And I've heard people say, do hard things first. And it's very hard to convince yourself to do hard things first, because harder things are hard. They do require more energy. It's harder to get started on them. It's harder to power through them.
Yeah.
But the way you explain it, it does make perfect sense. And for a child to be able to know that, do this, get it done with, and then you get the rest of the evening to choose your activities, whether it be video games, playing with Legos, riding your bike, playing, whatever. So it makes perfect sense. I love that.
I just wish maybe I had a parent, because mm-hmm. you know, it's easy if you're the parent and you, but to convince yourself of that. Now, mm-hmm. obviously, Alyssa, I hear you
yeah.
and I get it, but doing it,
right.
initiating that process.
Right.
Or
tricky.
A proctor near you
yeah,
to make you say,
like, yeah.
Lori, now you need
yeah.
to do
yeah.
this, and then you do this.
So what I do with
first
adults,
this and that.
Yeah, I do this with kids too, but what I like doing with my clients is say, hey, let's just list all the ways you spend your time, responsibilities and your privilege, your free time, your fun stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I just ask them, can you just rank those from the hardest one to start to the easiest one to start? And I just have them take a look at that. And so if they have a couple of things on that list that they're supposed to do during this time of the day, start with the harder one and then go from there and just kind of go down. What I also do is I will say, look, it's not just electronics that are kind of derailing people. It's not just your high focused activities. It's probably the things that are in the bottom third of that list. So I just ask people, if you want to have a good transition and increase your ability to activate or to initiate on these tasks, just don't do one of those lower third activities right before trying to do an upper third,
mm-hmm.
right? Maybe do the middle third if you need to warm up, right?
Mm-hmm.
But just don't do those.
That makes perfect sense. I love that.
Okay. And that makes it because
it does.
Because adults
sense.
Do not like to be rigid. This uh-huh. is a hard change for them to make. And sometimes just using that rule of thirds is a little bit more palatable for adults to
right.
do for themselves.
Well, and I'm even thinking about kids in the classroom. You know, we oftentimes hear parents report that the teacher says he can't work independently. He can't get started on his work. Not just that maybe he can't finish it, but he or she can't get started on tasks independently. They need the teacher on top of them. They need one-on-one. They need reminders. They need proximity control. So in a classroom setting, I'm thinking, my mind is kind of going as you're talking about, usually they are probably switching from a more preferred activity, like getting to sit and listen to the teacher teach while I'm fiddling around with things in my desk and I'm looking around the room, I'm taking in all this stimuli going on around me, and now I'm having to switch to a non-preferred activity, like sitting still, concentrating, doing my math
writing, reading.
Exactly. So what would be something that you could give, if you can think of something that could be used in the classroom setting for a kiddo like that, that has a hard time getting started on tasks?
Sure. And this is exactly, this process I'm going to talk to you about is the exact same process of when you're trying to get your child off of electronics and now it is time to go take a bath, right?
Okay.
It's a transition process and certain things have to happen. You know how in school when you get accommodations for longer time on a test? I'm going to ask for an accommodation to give longer time for a transition and that transition is going to be structured. So you're talking about just going from listening where I can move freely and fidget with stuff to having to actually pick up my pencil and do work. What I would say is that the teacher needs to give a definitive directive. Put everything away and pick up your pencil.
Mm-hmm.
Let's read the instruction together and then wait and let that child in his own time. Okay, my brain is telling me I got to put this down. They're usually doing it. And sometimes what we'll do is we'll jump in and prompt them again before their brain is actually transitioned and processed. I got to put this down. And what we can do is just say, put that down, find a place to stop, give them a minute, and then say, all right, now it's time to start.
Okay.
And a lot of times if you'll let that brain naturally run down and then gin back up, they can do it on their own. The last thing to think about as you're trying to transition a kid in class is, and at home too, is to wait for that physical engagement. And so often we'll give an instruction and walk away thinking that, well, they heard it. That's enough for them to get started. I would wait for the physical engagement before you walk away.
That's a great suggestion.
That makes sense. Because a lot of times kids will even just smile and nod.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I got it.
Do you understand? And well, everybody knows. I mean, you don't have to have ADHD and be very old for very long to know what's the answer to do you understand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course I do. I'm listening.
Mm-hmm. Right. But look for physical engagement. I like that. That's
They've
great.
Actually started their task.
So I know you had asked a question earlier about some stuff at home. Like, I know you guys were talking and you had some great strategies. Do you remember?
So, for example, getting started. So kids often have a hard time getting started on homework or assignments in school, tasks. But a lot of adults, and we see a lot of adults, and we diagnose a lot of adults with ADHD, initiating tasks at home, chores. For me, the hardest thing for me to initiate in my life, for some reason, is laundry. I will sit and I will try to break it up into smaller segments. I'll try to do it more often. I put it off so much that it becomes this overwhelming task because the hamper is overflowing. I know it's not just a matter of throwing it in the washer and pressing start because it's a process. Then I got to put it in the dryer. Then I have to put it away. And I procrastinate it as long as I possibly can and wait and wait and wait and put it off and put it off. So personally and selfishly, do you have any good recommendations or strategies for initiating a task like that? Which for me, it is a non-preferred activity.
Yeah, sure. So the first thing is when we're kind of planning out our day or just sort of looking at the structure of our day, we're not going to put some of those really hyper-focusing activities right before we need to do laundry. That's the first thing we're going to do.
Okay.
The next thing for adolescents and adults who really need to self-start some of these non-preferred activities, it's to kind of get in your head and accept the fact that I cannot make the decision to not do it from a place of comfort. And that means when I'm sitting on the couch, the timer goes off, or I see the signal, I can't continue to sit on the couch and decide I'm not going to go over there and start the laundry. And what I ask people to do is to break it up in this way. I only need you. I only expect you to go where the laundry is. Hmm. And so if the first step is sorting, you haven't done that yet, I'm just expecting that you will go and stand in front of the hamper. And I want you to stand there for 5 minutes. Why am I asking you to stand there for a while? It's because I want your brain to transition from the preferred activity to the non-preferred. Hmm. And I want you to give very your smart. Brain...
That is a smart
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, I want you to give your brain a break here. The next thing, if you can't start it in 5 minutes, walk around the block, go take a break, okay? Walk out to the mailbox, go get a drink of water, go to the bathroom, I don't care. But do not do another activity. Just walk around, reset your head, mm-hmm. come back to the hamper, stand there another 5 minutes. Chances are you're not going to need a second 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Don't
most
pick up your
people
phone.
Are going to stand there. They're going to allow their brain to transition, and they're just going to go ahead and start. Okay.
That's great. I love that. Thank you so much. I think that it makes perfect sense, and it sounds doable. And even, you know, some adults struggle with cleaning the house or doing grocery shopping or running errands. So I like that. Start with that small step and just allow yourself to be there and mentally prepare for it. Get your brain engaged physically.
Exactly. And I've had students that had a hard time making it to class in college mm-hmm. because they didn't feel well when they woke up in the morning. And so what I asked them to do is I assured them, I do not want you to go to school sick. I don't want you to be in there miserable. But here's what I'm going to ask you to do is that you get up, get in your car or walk over to the door of the classroom. And I just want you to stand there for 2 minutes. And if you can stand at the door that 2 minutes, do a little scan on your body. It's like, yep, I'm definitely sick. I'm throwing up. I got fever, whatever. Then go home. Mm-hmm. But if that just moving there was enough to help your brain transition, walk on into the classroom.
Brilliant. That's a great idea. I love that. So next, I was going to ask you more about advice and specific strategies you'd give, which I think you've given some great strategies. With initiation, you know, does it look different at different ages? You know, would you give different recommendations and strategies for different age groups that are struggling with initiation?
Well, I think the first thing I would do is to say that troubles with initiation activation are often interpreted as defiant, misbehavior, not in non-compliance,
right?
And I think that's what parents think it looks like. I've told you 4 times mm-hmm. to stop that and you haven't. And it looks so intentional and it's not. And so... that's what parents need to see is that if you were raised in a very authoritarian type family where if I say jump, you say how high, mm-hmm. and you tell your kid to get up and they don't do it, the only thing you're programmed to think of is their disobeying.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
So give them some grace.
Yeah, give them some grace and do some of these strategies that I'm going to give you a handout on. The next thing is just to understand that their brain takes a little while to transition and that you really have to wait and be present with them, with young children while that's happening. And then watch for that physical engagement,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
For adults, what it looks like is someone who's selfish. They're only starting the things that's easy for them, that they like. It also looks like they're unreliable.
Mm.
I've asked you to do this and it's still not done.
Which could probably cause a lot of relationship issues.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it does. It causes a tremendous, all ages,
mm-hmm.
this creates a tremendous strain on the relationships when there's not a clear understanding that this is probably mostly a transition or an activation issue, not a desire issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's so hard for people to understand that a lot of the things that people with ADHD do are not on purpose and they're not out of spite or because they're bad people or have
or
bad
lazy.
Intent. Right. They really, in 99% of the cases, they want to do well. Mm-hmm. I want to do what you've asked me to do.
Yes.
I want to please.
Yes.
But I can't. Mm-hmm. My brain is not cooperating.
So true. And it's perceived, yes, you know, by teachers, by parents, the behavior or the non-behavior, mm-hmm. I guess you could say,
right,
is perceived in a negative way. And so then instead of engaging in positive talk, constructive criticism, positive talk, using the strategies that you're talking about today, they get into that nagging, I told you to, why don't you do it?
You're going to miss recess.
Yes,
I'm
exactly.
I'm writing a note home to your mom.
Consequences.
Yeah, you're losing all your electronics.
Which it's then we kind of shut down mm-hmm. our ADHD brains. We don't like that negative talk mm-hmm. and negative feeling. Well, that is really interesting.
I know. It really does. I kind of want to know if you're going to stand in front of your laundry for 5 minutes.
I'm going to try it.
Abby's, every time we talk about this, she's like, it's laundry. I hate laundry.
It is. I don't know what the problem. And I live by myself. So you can imagine if I had children and their laundry to do as well, yeah. which maybe it would be more motivating, more urgent if my children didn't have clothes to get up and wear the next day to school. But I have plenty of clothes, and truth be told,
exactly right.
I don't, it only becomes urgent when I run out of undergarments.
Mm-hmm.
Truth be told.
Yeah.
That's when it becomes urgent.
Well, try it and let me know how it works.
I'm definitely going to try it, and I will let you know how it works. I love that.
Do you do mostly individual, or do you have any groups?
I do have a parent group. We have a parent education program where they can learn a lot more about things like this, about these executive functions that you guys are talking about, and some more effective intervention methods than just handing your kid a list or threatening them. And then that education program comes with group coaching. Mm. And if they're not group people, that's okay. They can sign up for private coaching.
But sometimes the group is nice. Awesome. Sometimes it's good to be like hearing what other parents are doing and what they're going through. And
right.
They are really supportive of each other, and they help bring each other along. They'll say, look, I remember when I first tried that transition process, my kid looked at me like I had two heads.
Mm-hmm.
But it works now. My child is much more compliant and independent.
That's great. It's probably more motivating, too, to hear that it's been successful for someone else that's been in your shoes.
Right. And then when it comes to older kids, probably around 14 and above, that's when we're probably starting to have, we're still in a collaborative coaching environment with parents, but we're starting to spend a lot more time with just the student then.
Okay. So, and you'll start working with individuals at what age is the youngest?
The youngest that has ever been referred to me is 4 years old.
Okay. Good to know. So you're not afraid of a four-year-old?
No, I'm not afraid of a four-year-old at all. But as you would imagine, most of the training goes toward the parent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's what I would make sure that your parents understand, is that parent training is actually part of the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are still looking at it as this luxury add-on after medication. But it's actually part of the treatment.
A huge part.
Yes.
It is a huge part.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That is awesome.
So do you do all of your coaching virtual?
Yes. There are very few that even come to the house anymore since COVID. They just found out, if I don't have to drive that 30 minutes to get there, why do it?
Save
we
time.
Can do this over Zoom. So it's all virtual now.
It's right. easier to initiate that task.
It is.
And transition to it.
It is. And it's easier. You don't have to worry about childcare for the other siblings and... You know,
right?
If you had to do it from brother's soccer practice, you can do it from there.
That's awesome.
Very true.
That is so nice.
Traffic.
So the last thing, you've given us so many great resources and strategies and tools. Are there any specific resources you think would be very valuable for our listeners, whether it be an adult with ADHD, a parent of children with ADHD? What resources would you recommend?
Well, I think I would go straight to the guru himself, right? I would go to Ned Hallowell and John Rady and their new book, ADHD 2.0. I recommend that book for parents who may be on the non-believing side or the non-understanding side. I also recommend that book for parents who were diagnosed as children back when we thought this was a behavioral disorder instead of a developmental disorder, because if they can understand their own ADHD better, it helps them understand their child's. And so that's what I recommend for adults. And for kids, I recommend this book called Journal from an ADHD Kid, The Good, the Bad, the Useful by Tobias Stump. And if you've ever read like Diary of a Wimpy Kid, it's sort of in that format.
That's awesome.
But it's also kind of a workbook to let your child communicate back with you.
Oh, I love that. That so we'll definitely, awesome. We'll put a link to that, to both those books in the show notes. And then Mary, how do people find you?
They can find me at chaosfreeadhd.com. And I'm also going to give you a sort of a summary of those strategies that I talked about, and you can put it on a PDF and load
that
it up.
That would be great. Absolutely.
Wonderful.
That is awesome. Thank you for that.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Thank
we
you appreciate
so much.
You being here. This has been very informative. And again, Abby and I benefit probably from this more than most of listeners, because we live this. And so these strategies are amazing, and I'm going to try them at home.
Yes, good, definitely.
Good. See how it works. We'll report back.
And if you would be
open to coming back for another episode later on, you are a wealth of information. And I know we just scratched the surface of what you know and what you can offer. So it'd be great to have you back and talk a little bit more just about coaching and ADHD and all that goes with it.
Nothing would please me more.
Awesome. Well,
wonderful.
Thank you. Well, everybody, thank you guys for listening today. If you have questions or suggestions about future episodes, you can reach us at letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com. Or Abby, where can they find us online?
You can find our podcast website at ltldpodcast.com, where you can access all our different episodes grouped by episode number, grouped by themes, topics, etc.
Well, thank you for being here. We'll see you guys next time, or we'll talk to you next time where we move on to our next executive functioning topic.
Yes. Thank
Have
you,
a great
everyone.
Day.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.